Welcome to the Full Potential Podcast. I am your host, Nick Wagner Sr., and every week I interview guests that share career stories, ideas, and experiences to empower and inspire people to reach their full potential. If you enjoy the episode, please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple Podcasts, Google, and Spotify. Thanks for listening. Foster Charles, the founder and CEO of Charles IT. So Foster, thank you so much for joining me tonight and welcome to the show.
No, appreciate you having me on, Nick.
And I mentioned to Foster before we started, I love his background. I love the designs behind him and the TV. He's in his office, which looks super cool. I wish my home office looked that cool. But so Foster, I'm so happy to have you on. Every week I try to bring on a guest to share their career journey with my audience. And I believe that hearing from others from like yourself about their career journeys will help individuals, especially the early career professionals that I have listened to this podcast and watched this show, understand what could be with their career, right? So you're right out of school, whether it be high school or college, you don't know what you want to do. Hearing from someone like yourself that has been very successful, I think always kind of gives people some inspiration on what could be. So we're gonna hear all about your business today. Charles IT, we're gonna hear how you started your business, which I think is a really cool story. But let's start with when you meet people, Foster, for, you know, whether it be a networking event or a client, and they're like, who is Foster? Like, how do you answer that question? How do you describe yourself to people when you meet for the first time?
I don't know. I'm usually pretty humble, and I just like to say I'm founder and CEO of Charles IT. And sometimes people have heard of us or not, and if they haven't, usually they ask, like, what the heck is that? And I just tell them that we're an IT company, but I try to specialize in focus in real relationships and making raving fans out of our clients. Like, for me, what drives me personally and through the business is these real relationships that I get to make and get to learn about other people's businesses and what affects them. And that's what I'm passionate about.
Yeah, and that really, when I talked with you and one of your colleagues, Sal, and I think it was a couple months ago at this point when we first met each other, I absolutely got the impression about how much you cared about the customer and how relationships were such a big thing for you, which I think is really cool, especially for a small business. And we're gonna talk more about that. But I wanna go back to when you were a little Foster growing up. Was owning your own business in the IT world something that you knew you wanted to do, like a dream of yours, being an entrepreneur? Like, what did you want to do when you were growing up?
I was lucky. I always knew I wanted to do something with computers. Imagine this. Me being a father now, I'm looking at it. And so having your 7-year-old son coming up to you and trying to convince you to upgrade from Windows 3.1 to Windows 95, and I was 7. And that's what I was doing to my poor father. Like, I was like trying to push him to upgrade his computer, and I'm 7 years old. And even then, like, I had my own computer, and take a 7-year-old again. And I got good at fixing computers because I would have to reload Windows off of 50 floppy disks. Like, you want to instill patience into a 7-year-old kid. I got real good at fixing the computer because I did not want to sit there and load it. I mean, that's like a 2-hour process. So I've been always blessed knowing that I wanted to go into IT, but I wanted to do something with computers. I didn't know what the heck I wanted to do, and I never thought I was going to own my own business. If you asked me like even like 4 or 5 years ago where I'd be now, and every year I say that, there's no way I could predict what it was or what it would become or what I was going to do. I mean, you never think, oh, yeah, I'm going to start my own business and employ 40 people and do all this. It's still mind-boggling, or it tricks me sometimes.
So since I know you're a super passionate tech guy, I want to ask the question. You obviously built a lot of computers for yourself as a kid. Do you remember like the first one that you built that was yours? And how fast it was, and like some of the specs on it.
Oh yeah, I remember exactly what that was. My first computer, the 1 gigahertz processor just came out, and I remember just like oogling over this thing, and I couldn't afford it. So I had to go down to like 800 megahertz. That was my first processor. It had like a whopping 8 gigs of RAM. Like, that was an astronomical amount of RAM. I remember, like, that's where I went all out on. So SSDs didn't exist, none of that kind of stuff. Like, yeah, I remember building it. I had, like, the clear side. I spent all my money to get one of those, like, cathode tubes that, like, lit up with the bass in a certain thing. So, like, play a video game or listen to music and be, like, flashing in the corner.
I feel like anyone that really loves technology remembers the first computer they built. Oh, yeah. or, like, you know, one of the ones that really stood out to them. So I love that. So you knew you wanted to do IT. You had this passion for technology from an early age. Was the plan to finish high school and go to college and get a degree? Was the plan to finish high school and go get a job? Like, what was, how did that play out? Tell us that story.
That was interesting. So again, I knew I wanted to do something with computers, but I never knew what. I just loved computers. I was a total nerd through and through. And really what kicked it off for me is I was in high school. I was 15 at the time. I remember this. And I was getting my eyes checked at doctors. And he was just like, I had to think about my eyes and like people touching my eyes and stuff. So he's like, just trying to make conversation with me. So what do you do? Like, what do you do to make money? That kind of thing. And I told him, I was like, well, I kind of fix computers on the side for friends and family. And he's like, you know what? Like, I'm having a problem with my wireless. You think you could like fix that? And like the wireless was pretty new then. I was like, yeah, I could do that. Yeah, why not? And so, like, looking back at it now, he let me come into his office and like install a wireless because his current IT guy couldn't do it. And I was 15. And his name's Thomas Beggins. It was like Connecticut Eye Physicians, and he's still a client to this day. And he really kind of like took me under his wing, but like he's like, oh, maybe you should have like this recurring contract where like I could pay you and then you guaranteed to come out. And like I was 15 and I signed my first contract with him. And looking back at it now, like he totally didn't need to do that. Talk about taking a risk. And like I just had somebody that really helped me. But like I remember, like, if his server went down, I was calling a cab. Like, I couldn't drive there, I couldn't get there. It could be in the middle of the day, like I'm in school. And I remember one time the server did go down and I had to like crew practice after school, and I had to go and do that instead. And I got in trouble for doing that. So like that is really what like started it, is that I luckily had somebody that saw something I didn't know in myself and kind of took me under his wing and was able to like, he was like slowly nudging me in the right direction of like, you know, like this recurring revenue thought process or a contract, or you should do this. And hey, I have other friends that could do this. And he was relatively well known around town. So he was a fantastic reference. And he's passionate about helping other people in a similar way that I've come to in the past couple of years myself, of like recognizing some things that people sometimes just don't even see in themselves.
I there's so much to unpack in what you just said. I love how he's still a client today. That makes that absolutely makes me smile, because he was your first paying client and he's still a client today. So that shows me you're definitely doing something right. But I want to know, what did your parents think when you came home and you're like, hey, I think I'm going to start this business, and like, well, what happened there? How did that conversation happen?
I don't know. Well, I guess to go back to your other question was like, what about college and like where did that all land? And I remember I was talking to a friend in high school, and I never did homework. I never did any of that kind of stuff. I was able to test through a lot of courses, and the business one came really, really smooth to me. And I remember I was talking to somebody in my business class, and I remember I scored somehow. I never took any notes. It was college. It was DECA. If anybody's afraid of DECA, I love DECA. And I've gone back and spoke to their classes a couple of times. But, like, I remember I scored, like, the highest on the final. And, like, I told them, I was like, I don't think I'm going to college. Like, I don't see the point of this. I was 15 when I started, and, like, 16, you start driving. And I already had, like, this little business thing. And that, like, blew people away. And to make matters worse, my mother was like a superintendent or assistant superintendent at the time. So like not going to college is like not like the best thing. Like, look, he's like, no, you gotta go. And so I was pushed to go to college and do do that. But I remember going to college and I had a full-time employee and trying to do college at the same time. And it was not, I was struggling to try to do both. That was difficult to be able to do. Sorry, what was your original question?
It's fascinating, right? Because so that was 2005, 2006 timeframe, right?
Yep, 2006, I graduated high school.
I think it's changed a lot. I think, and you've probably seen this, I think a lot of employers are starting to not require college degrees, not just small employers, but some of the larger employers as well. And maybe you go and get a technical certificate, or you go to a technical college, or you go and get some certifications online. And I think you're going to hopefully see more opportunities for people that don't go to college in the years to come. And I think the pendulum has swung. So, but I think back when you did it, I think a lot of people, I mean, like your mom is a perfect example. It's like, well, no, like Foster, you have to go to college. You got to go. So I want to know, did you finish? Did you actually finish college? You did not.
No. I made a whole semester. And then like, I just remember still to this day, I was doing a job for somebody and I'm in the dorm room and I had like 9 computers, but I had nowhere to put them. So I had 3 on top of 3 on top of 3. And I was like imaging them or doing something like that. And I remember the roommate coming in. He's like, what the hell? Did you rob a Best Buy? Like, where did you come from? And I trying to do both business and trying to get something off the ground and focusing on that and trying to do college and regular work. I had to make a call. And probably one of the best things for me is basic rule of thumb my parents in late is like, okay, college, like if you get a 3 or 3.5 GPA, I forget what it was, and above, we'll pay. And anything below that, like, you got to pay. Like, you got to apply yourself. And that's probably the best thing because I remember saying, doing the math, and I was like, wow, that class is like $250 right there. And I was like, is that, like, I'd rather go make $250. Like, I know I could have done something. And so I totally support. Not everybody needs to go to college. Absolutely. Like, we rarely are looking at the college degree. Like, don't get me wrong. It helps. It shows that, especially if you have a really high GPA, definitely put that on your resume. Like, I'm looking for things that are impressive or like Eagle Scouts. I'm a fan of people who are Eagle Scouts because, like, you have to do certain things before you're 18 and that. And then, like, a 4.0 GPA or that kind of thing. Or when you're a full-time athlete and you have a really high GPA, like those things stand out to me, but it's totally not, you don't need it. You need, like, the technical certifications are really important to us, but especially in IT, by the time they're teaching it in a school and it goes through the whole thing, it's probably starting to fall out of date. I mean, it changes so quickly. So I don't need the college degree.
So you made the decision and you left school.
Oh yeah.
How, I have to ask, because you clearly your mom is big in education. How did that go over with your parents? And then you leave school. How did that affect the business? What was the impact of that decision?
I remember it being difficult and being like, this is just crazy. And I wasn't having fun. And like, it was a lot. And so I remember I was like, I can't just leave. So I went to Middlesex Community College. And I remember I did like one semester. I didn't even make it the full year there. And then I did a semester at Middlesex Community College. And I think that's how I like eased my mom into it. Like, no, I'm not dropping out. I'm going to do this. And I got just as good an education there than, if not better, because it was, you were way more focused. Like, I wasn't going back to the dorm and think about what I'm doing later, or trying to like make certain friends or anything like that. So I loved Middlesex. But again, a semester there. And then when I got rid of all that and really focused on the business, I didn't have business coming out my ears, but I got to respond quickly, take care of people, and just do what you need to do. Like, I learned so much in trying to run a business or just learning to keep books. Like, the right way to do it. Like, my first run at freaking accounting was, oh, god awful. It was bad. But I mean, I probably had 3-4 revisions of it. And I learned relatively quickly how to read a P&L and balance sheet and what the hell did that mean to my business, and just taking care of clients or just trying to send out an invoice or try to file sales tax. Like, oh wait, I have to collect sales tax. It's like payroll. Like, you know, you're piecing things together, and it was just trial by fire. And I didn't stop and just focus on business and marketing and have it explode. I got to take care of the clients that I did have and use word of mouth, but the education I was getting was in setting up books and setting up, thinking about payroll and thinking about basic benefits or hiring an employee or paying sales tax or just the basics that come along with it. And it's just as much of an education, but I felt like I was at least doing something for me, you know?
You bring up a great point, because while your passion is technology and computers, you just rattled off a host of other things that have nothing to do with that subject that you had to figure out to run your business. And I think that's such a great point you just made for people that are thinking about being entrepreneurs or want to know what it takes. You can be really good at something, but you're going to have to learn a lot of other things, because you know you don't have, when you started out, you didn't have an accountant, an HR person, a marketing person. You're a jack of all trades, right?
Oh yeah. The best words of advice. Like if you're going to go and do it, like gotta have some tenacity, like don't give up. You have to go for it. And don't be afraid to make mistakes and just learn, like figure it out. People are so afraid to make a mistake or potentially fail that it analysis paralysis. Like you can't be a wimp about it. You just go for it and fail and screw it up and try again. And just go for it, you know?
Well, I will say, I think as a former entrepreneur myself who had a business in my 20s, I think it's easier to fail at a younger age, because I just feel like we're wired to fail it. I don't know, fail fast, right? And fail more often at a younger age. As we get older, I think it's scarier to fail, but I think that's great advice. So you've had the business now for 15 years. Yeah, 15 years. And you mentioned you had an employee while you were going to college, and now you have over 40. Tell us about, and this is a really, I think this is a really important point. I think most entrepreneurs remember hiring their first employee, because that's a big deal. Because as an entrepreneur, you know, the company is yours and it's your vision and you work so hard, and then when you hire someone for the first time that's not you, it's kind of like, oh my gosh. So do you remember that process of hiring your first employee? And I know you have a passion for people. So like, how did that go? And you know, you have over 40 now. What have you learned during the hiring process as you've gone through these 15 years?
So first employee was Isaiah. And so Isaiah is still with me today, and I'm super proud of that. And I'm super proud of him. I hired Isaiah as like a favor to a family friend, and I needed when he started, I think he started like paying my parking tickets and like doing laundry for me and like freaking anything I really needed. And I remember like the whole hiring process, like, yeah, sure. They like had like a really brief kind of conversation. I was like, sure, you can start like Tuesday or something. Like I could use the help. That'd be great. Yeah. And the first one is totally under the table thought process. Like it was, I said, payroll, what? You know? And I don't know. Like it was, I just needed it. I needed the extra time because I certain things were starting to slip, and you tried to do it all yourself and you start messing that up. But I guess what I learned over years and years of interviewing and talking to people is 100% I go on the personality. There's nothing like tenacity, grit, passion. Like somebody who's passionate and comes through with that, like I'm judging for those characters. Like I can train technical. You have to have the right mindset for it, but that can relatively come out pretty easily and figure out like, okay, you can do this. But if I can give advice for anybody like trying to apply or interview or move up the career path, it is 100% passion. Like if I have given so many people that probably were underqualified or not that they didn't deserve the job, but like just on paper, you'd be like, no way. And they come in and they're passionate and they're like, I'm going to work harder. I'm going to be there. Like, I love this. Like, just give me any job. I'll do it. I'll knock it out of the park. And when they start, they freaking do any job and they knock it out of the park. And I will hire that person 9 times out of 10 over somebody more qualified every time.
So you have your first client with you 15 years later, still paying you for services, and your first employee almost 15 years later still works for you. I absolutely love that, and I appreciate you sharing that. And I think you bring up a lot of great points about some of what you've learned over the years during the hiring process. And I love how your mindset has obviously changed from way back in the day. We're like, I just need some help doing some stuff to kind of live, right, and figure this out, right?
Yeah.
So I want to pivot and I want to talk about, so you mentioned, you know, you started the company out like fixing computers and setting up Wi-Fi and you know, doing things with servers, right? But for my audience that's not super tech savvy, like, share a little bit more about what your organization does, right? Like, so what does Charles IT do? Like, what are some of the services you offer? Like, who are client? Like, what does a typical client look like of yours? Like, who do you cater to?
So what we do is we're basically an outsourced IT department. So most of our clients, like, I have a hard enough time hiring a tech, and like, I'm a nerd and geeky, and we have whole processes around it. And so our clients are usually trying to hire and manage a tech, which is a very different kind of personality usually. And a lot of times they're just struggling with it. And so what they do instead is they choose to outsource to us. And so we handle anything an IT department would be. So if it has an IP address, so from phone systems to printers to day-to-day support, they just call us no matter what the problem is. Oh, I need internet or whatever it may be. So really what we're doing for services is the day-to-day support, where you can call up like a help desk. We do strategic planning. We do disaster recovery. We do a lot in compliance. So our target clients are anywhere from 25 to 350 employees, and they are in some regulated industry. So we focus in compliance and regulation. So HIPAA, DFARS, ITAR, CMMC, SOC 2 compliance, anything along those lines, picked from the alphabet soup of compliance. Like, that's what we're looking for our clients, because they care about IT. They understand that they have to report to somebody, and that security is usually on their mind and protecting their own infrastructure or their client's data. And that's really what we focus on. We guide people through those compliances. So I can hold their hand. We can tell them from a huge like set of 100 or 200 controls, what the heck is this super technical thing? What does it mean to me? And why should I even care about it for my business? And how do we implement this cost effectively? And then we'll hold their hand through the compliance, we'll help them find an auditor, get them certified, and carry them through the whole way through, all while handling all their day-to-day IT help as much as they could.
No, that's awesome. And the compliance stuff can be really very, very challenging for a lot of companies, because to your point, it is super complex, and you do not want to fall out of compliance for a variety of reasons. I want to ask one follow-up question, and then I want to go back to more about the business. The topic of cybersecurity. So you hear on a daily basis, Foster, like, this company was hacked, or, you know, this company had a website breach. And I mean, and not small companies, big companies. I mean, you hear that, you hear this quite often. Share a little bit about the topic of cybersecurity, and just, you know, like, is it at the forefront of every person's mind that's in the tech world, like yourself? And how do you actually like, articulate to clients like, this is a really big deal?
I think the problem most big clients have is that they're like, oh, it won't happen to me, or I'm not a big enough target, or like, some organizations are so big they're like afraid they won't be hacked, or they're protect the main servers, but all these ancillary systems get hacked. And then I have like clients that are smaller, like, who cares, I don't have data to protect, or they can get in. And it's a PR nightmare for them usually when something like that happens. So, I don't know, the most important thing is it's doing the right thing, or keeping most hacks happen from not following a best practice. And so it's the computers are up to date, or you're running the server 2008 or something that like that went end of life for support years ago, and say Windows 7 years ago, and they're still running those things because, oh, this application only happens here and they don't want to upgrade it or cost too much to do this. In certain organizations, you can figure out how to make that work, but you're going to spend a bunch of money doing it. And so people are afraid to invest appropriately. Really what I hunt for, like, again, that real relationships is I'm looking for somebody that doesn't believe IT is a necessary evil, because when you start looking at IT as a necessary evil, you start treating it that way. You're undermining like what you're going to spend in it, and people just don't make the right decisions. It's not crazy complicated. The majority of hacks and the number one way we get new clients is, hey, we were just breached. Something's happening. Please save us, please. And what happens is we come in and we just implement best practices. Like, oh, that's server 2008. That's an old version of Exchange. That shouldn't be publicly facing. Like, and these are not, it's not crazy complicated. And some of that is down to the level of gross negligence. I mean, they know it's not supported and they leave it there because it's just too expensive. So when you start looking at it as necessary evil, instead, most of our clients, the goal is like, how can IT help my business? How can I move it forward? How can this make me the next sale or help out our clients? And that's who we're trying to partner with.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I bring it up just because it's such a, I mean, what you just said, you know, people come to you and like, hey, Foster, like my company's been breached, like I lost data or they're holding me hostage. That's a terrifying experience for a small business owner. So I appreciate you sharing that. I want to go back to the topic of building relationships, because I know that relationships are so important to you with your clients, with your employees. Tell me a little bit about, you know, how did this whole idea of relationship building become such a forefront of who you are and your company? Was it something that your parents instilled in you? Was it something that you just kind of learned worked? Like how did you come up with that that model?
So I think it's a byproduct. So what personally drives me is I like to share experiences with people that they might not do on their own. And that bleeds into my business side and personal life dramatically. And so because of that, the people that you want to share those experiences are that, like, I find by sharing that those experiences or breaking bread together and going to a restaurant or doing something that you lifetime kind of experiences, bucket list kind of items, it really brings people together and it establishes that kind of relationship. My favorite thing to do is, like, my clients invite me to golf, and that's like cruel and unusual punishment to watch me try to play golf. But I bring them sporting clay shooting. So you shoot sporting clay. And a lot of my clients have never shot a gun before. And bring them out shotgun field and watch a little clay pigeon like blow up and like the orange clay goes everywhere. And like there's something super satisfying about that. And like that's something that I do every year multiple times, bring out as many clients or employees to it. And it's cool. It's that real, you build relationships over those cool experiences. And it's something I'm super passionate about. I my whole office, I bring somewhere every quarter and do check off a life experience like that. And then once a year, we end up flying the whole office to some crazy place. And it's always based around a bucket list kind of item, from the Grand Canyon to driving supercars. Like there's always some crazy thing that we're doing. And that's the fun part. Like those are the relationships I have. Some of my biggest clients have come from ex-employees that have left. So like always leaving on good terms and having those strong relationships and truly caring about people, whether it's a client or a teammate, and whether they're leaving on their terms or ours or making sure they land on their feet, or a client and just taking care of them and always doing the right thing. It goes so far. And those relationships are truly what propel you. It's my network of people that support me, or if I need a hand or something goes wrong, like they're there for you. It's great. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I love that. And I love the culture you're trying to build at your company, because culture is so important for the success of a company. So I have a two-part question before we wrap up. Tell me one of the things you're most just excited and proud of is from a success perspective with the business. And then tell me one of the biggest things that went wrong that you learned from on the flip side.
God, That's hard. I guess the biggest success is, there's a small story behind it. So it'll be actually this year. I think in the next few months, we'll hit the goal. And it, well, my goal, and I set it out 10 years ago in a conference room, is to be $10 million by in 2020. It was 10, be 10 in 20 was like the thought process. And that was 10 years ago I set it out. And I'm going to be like, I was 6 months off. You know, like we'll hit it mid-year this year. And that's, I'm super proud of it because it, we had to sustain about 25% growth year over year constantly. And we've continued that growth. 27% has been our average for like past 5 years. And why that was so important to me was, I remember I was in the conference room and I had like a daily huddle every morning. And it was probably only 6 or 7 people at the time. And I finished the meeting and everybody, I did it at the conference room door. And everybody has to walk past me. And I realized, it's like, holy crap, all these people and their families and their lives depend on Charles IT existence, being profitable, like paying them. Like, I'm like my immediate like network, like factor of 7, you're like, holy cow, all the people I'm influencing right now. And that scared the crap out of me. And I was so worried about it. And so what really drove that was, I was like, from $10 million and probably 50 people, and if I get hit by a bus, the company's large enough and has processes enough to be able to continue to be sustained. And I wouldn't, I don't, I like, that was the biggest weight on my shoulders, was my team. And if something happened to me, and the, like the business at that time would have totally fallen apart. And that was the biggest motivator. So that is like, one, it was a super long-term goal. And two, definitely in the past year or two, my team is capable of running the whole business. Like, I remember I took a vacation and I didn't even think about work at all. And like going back to 2011, I went on my honeymoon and I probably worked like 6 hours a day, every day, like for my whole honeymoon. And like, that was me like relaxing. And so like, that was huge and something I'm super proud of.
I absolutely love that. What about on the flip side, something that didn't go well that you learned from?
Oh, geez. All sorts of things don't go like, things go wrong every day. And it, especially in the beginning, like all sorts of stuff. You just fail fast and move on. I don't know. This is random, but there's one client I was, and it struck me particularly because it was the first time ego got involved. And so what it was I was pitching a client. There's a certain price that I pitched, and I had it, and I thought I had it all figured out, and this is how you should pitch it, and like, this is the best way, and we're definitely the best. And the problem was, is ego infiltrated the conversation for the first time. And I remember I lost that client. And a potential client, they never signed with me. And I just remember like just being so upset with myself that I ever let ego come into running the business, being that, and just being involved in any of the decision-making process. So it's something that I have out all the time, is just be humble. And it doesn't matter how good you are. Like, sometimes they're not fit or anything like that. But as soon as ego gets involved, or you start thinking you're better than the next person, like, there are tons of MSPs out there that do what I do, and they do it fantastically, and they do it better. It's just know that you're not the best, fail fast, and keep on chugging.
Yeah, no, I think that's great advice. I appreciate that. And I could tell from our first conversation how humble you were. So I think you truly live that. So I thank you again for making time and joining us on the Full Potential Podcast, Foster. I always close the same question with every guest. What is that one piece of advice that you would give my audience that's helped you reach your full potential? So you've been really successful over the past 15 years with the business. What is that secret sauce that's made you successful that you'd want to share?
I'm going to break it down to 3, I think, because I think the advice changes depending on where you are in your thought process. So if you're just interviewing, just starting out, or trying to move up your career, it's that passion, going back to that, like, hire on passion, show that passion, work hard, prove it. When you're first, if you're making that leap and trying to start a business, the best words of advice I ever got, and this came from my father, was just, it's simple. Be the first one in and the last one out. Work hard and you'll be successful and you'll be fine. And that works for a really long time. Like when you're till 5, 10, maybe 15 employees, like when it starts getting too big, and really the words of advice at that point, like if you're at that point in your career, in your life, it's hire everybody possible smarter than you and build a fantastic team. Like working hard and first one in, last one out gets you to a certain size. But after that point, like it sounds cheesy and it's in all sorts of business books and everything, but absolutely, like the let go of trying to be the smartest person in the room or trying to figure it out, or like you can't be it. And building a fantastic team of passionate people that believe in what you believe, like you want to work with like-minded individuals that want to push hard and do that. And if it wasn't for my team, I wouldn't even be close to where I am today. For sure, build the best team possible.
I absolutely love the advice. So, and in three stages too. So that was really good. I appreciate that. I want to just say thanks again. Fantastic discussion. I'm so happy to have you on. You've had a great 15 years. I hope you have another great 15 years in the future. I absolutely find it just, it's such a wonderful story that your first client is still with you and your first employee, Foster. So you're clearly doing something right. So thanks for making time and joining me on the show. And we will make sure, Foster, I want to make sure I say this, we will link to your LinkedIn profile in the show description, as well as your company's website as well. So if anyone wants to get in touch with you about Charles IT, and maybe they have a need for IT, they know how to get in touch with you. So thanks again for making time. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Full Potential Podcast. If you'd like to hear more interviews, please subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple Podcasts, Google, and Spotify. You can also connect with us on social media, on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And don't forget to check out our website, fullpotentialmovement.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing, and be well.